in the purport. Yeah, Bhagavad Gita 14, and then there's the 1125, which covers much the same territory. I thought while we were discussing, can we start now? While we're discussing the mode of ignorance, we are still on page 4 with the mode of ignorance. But a lot of times when you see the discussion of the mode of ignorance, it talks about the illusion all the time is the characteristic of the mode of ignorance. And it just says illusion and doesn't really give you too much example of what they mean by illusion. But illusion simply means being convinced about things that are not the case. And that is to say, it means trafficking very heavily in unreality. Whereas people in the mode of passion, they do have to deal fairly successfully with reality. People in the mode of ignorance are very much deluded. So, for example, politicians who are very much acceptable by the mode of ignorance go in for theater. One of the signs of the mode of ignorance, in fact, one of the occupations of Shudras is, in fact, theater, the ability to create and sustain illusions. So I was just thinking of politicians who are excessively covered by the mode of ignorance, is they actually think that illusory things work, and what they're good at is a lot of theater, or trying to create the impression of things. I'm thinking of this African country, it used to be French West Africa. There was this guy named Bokassa who claimed himself emperor. And then it was quite a show. He spent a fortune on his coronation ceremony, had a solid gold carriage made in France, and all this other stuff, and built up these big, designed uniforms, bands, palaces, and that was the effect of just a show. But of course he was deposed, and it was all over just like that. This was also a characteristic of Italy during the fascist regime. The Mussolini was big shows. But no substance behind it. No real achievement, no real effort. None of the striving that characterizes the mode of passion to get something done. The mode of ignorance is just make-believe. What was achieved is really on the level of make-believe. And so people in the mode of ignorance, they have very, very heavy fantasy lives. And they're into their fantasy lives. One reason people in the mode of ignorance sleep so much is they like dreaming. They're very much into their dreams and they enjoy them more than anything else. So this is when it says illusion, performed in illusion, things like that. It's all based on false premises, on unreality, on ideas of what I am. There's no taste for actual reality. There are little bubbles that they pop. I just wanted to make a few remarks there about this, the nature of illusion. It's a very big achievement in the material world to keep oneself free from illusions. by the way, the temptation to take refuge of them is very great. People want to be special, they want to be recognized, they want to be somehow think that they've got something going. So they go around with a soundtrack in their head, and movie cameras are following them, and people get into it quite a bit. They try to script their relationships with everybody to fit some. They don't really care what the reality is, just so long as they can maintain any illusion. But as I said, it's very hard to deal with reality in human life, because the reality is so often so miserable and horrible that people feel that illusions are all that they have. So even people in motive passion, they also have illusions. But usually they know what the bottom line is, at least as far as money, strength, power, so they try to achieve those things on a more solid platform. Whereas in the motive ignorance, one doesn't even try that. It's too much work. Okay, so let's look at page 4 here. We're still going through motive ignorance. We didn't get to page 4. Here we have place the discussion of knowledge in the three modes. You'll see this in the both the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And the cat is very interesting. The real essence of the thing is given is in the purport, and so I've given that as a separate listing because it's the verses. A little obscure, but the purport makes it clear that concerned only with keeping the body comfortable. This knowledge in the mode of ignorance is simply a very narrow tunnel kind of vision. All you're interested in is putting bread on the table and doing your work and getting paid, and that's all you're concerned about. Whereas knowledge in the mode of passion is a little wider, but it produces many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and mental speculation. So in the mode of passion is a broader view. And then the mode of goodness is concerned with a spiritual knowledge. So mode of ignorance deals with the body, mode of passion deals with the mind, and mode of goodness deals with the spirit or the intelligence, what it really amounts to. Because Bhagavatam says, you know, foolish materialistic knowledge, well, how does that differ from mode of passion knowledge? Mode of passion knowledge is materialistic, but it's not quite so foolish. It's theories about how economics works, theories about how countries work, theories about how history works. Because you're plotting and scheming to take over the world when you're in the mode of passion. In the mode of ignorance, you have no plots, you have no schemes, you just want to get through the day. You don't really care, you're not interested in anything else. In the mode of ignorance, you want to know what you need to know to work, and maybe you know what's happening in the sports. Otherwise, there's no interest. In fact, sports is those who are sports fans, spectator sports, you notice how much that is in the mode of ignorance by nature. People who actually are sports people are more passionate, but people in the mode of ignorance, there's no effort on their part. They're completely passive, they're completely indolent, and they're absorbed in the outcome of something that is in fact a game and makes no real difference. But to them it becomes consummately important, the most important thing. So there's a typical example of the mode of ignorance. And the more and more people's absorption in sports and games. In fact, it's related to gambling. When Prabhupada says there's a regulative principle about no gambling, it makes it clear that what it means is wasting time in trivial, unimportant activities. He says, like so-called sporting activities, cinema, theater, and the like. We can add television to that. Always absorption in unreal activities. All in the mode of ignorance. Okay, so that, for the knowledge that's absorbed in those little things, very meager, you know, people in the mode of ignorance, they sit in bars and they have thick wallets, because the wallets are stuffed with newspaper clippings that prove different things in arguments, like who won these baseball games, or who was the National League batting champion, you know, in 1957, and all these things they have. They get in big arguments and fights about boxers and baseball teams and football teams. Meager, just very meager, is concerned with little trivial, unimportant things. Without knowledge of reality is also very typical. In other words, nobody in the mode of ignorance knows how things really work. They think that things just happen. Almost they think that things are going on causelessly. They can't understand that anybody actually does anything to get anywhere. It just happens. Okay, so let's come to action. Both places, I gave that two headings, although it's in the same box, the same row, because it's called karma and in both Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. But in the one place it's translated as action, the other place is work. So work or action. Now, again, performed in illusion. That is to say, bewilderment, what's going on, what am I doing, how am I don't know anything about it, really, I'm just doing it without any knowledge toward what end it's for, even. In disregard of scriptural injunctions. Now, generally, the mode of goodness, it's always regulated, and mode of passion says totally disregard scriptural injunctions. So mode of passion, mode of goodness, it's regulated. So in the mode of passion, the notion seems to be that it generally tends to follow regulation and scriptural injunction, although here and there, because of excess desire, you're going to go out of the boundaries. But there's a concern, at least in the mode of passion, to be somewhat in line with things. Performed in illusion of disregard of scriptural injunctions without concern for future bondage. In other words, there's no idea of the consequences whatsoever. So, for example, people in the mode of passion, they worry about their health, you know, they worry about their future. But the people in the mode of ignorance, they don't take any worry about it at all. They just completely think oblivious for their future. And so without concern for future bondage or for violence and distress caused to others. Now the action in the mode of passion will always cause distress to others. But people in the mode of passion, sometimes they try to regulate it or keep it to a minimum. They're not after your own welfare. And if some people get stomped on, well, that's the price you pay, but at least you watch out for it. In the mode of ignorance, you don't even care. You have no regard. And here we see in the Bhagavatam, it says it's actually impelled by violence and envy. So that's usually the reason you do something, to get back at somebody else. Whereas in the mode of passion, you want to enjoy the results yourself, and if some other people get hurt, well, what can be done? That's the nature of the world. But in the amount of ignorance that you want to see other people suffering. There's a saying, I think comes out of Hollywood. It's actually this writer, Gore Vidal, when I read it, he said that it is referring to the mentality of many people he knew. He said, it is not enough that one should succeed. Others must fail. You get it? It is not enough that one should succeed. Others must fail. Yeah, then you really know you're making it. Then you really know you're making it. Yeah. It's not enough that you succeed, but you also have to see this person, this person, this person. I succeed and they fail. This is the envious nature of the mode of ignorance. Somebody's just in the mode of passion. He succeeds, some other people succeed too, well, great. But the mode of ignorance is, you're less motivated by your own success than you are to keep other people from making it. So it's impelled by violence and envy. So you'll do anything. So revenge is a big mode of ignorance, impotence. Okay, we go on to the worker. Engaged in work against the injunction of Scripture. Materialistic, obstinate, cheating, expert in insulting, lazy, morose, and procrastination. This workers, we know these workers. So these certain things are there that they engage in, the materialistic, obstinate, against the injunction of Scripture. They don't like them. Cheating is always excess of that. Everybody cheats. Everyone's a thief. It's how much you get away from. How much can you steal? This is the way it goes. Expert in insulting. This is also characteristic of the worker and the motivation. He's got nothing good to say about anybody. And ask about anybody and tell you what's wrong with them. Expert in insulting. Then lazy. So they work in spurts. And when they do work, they complain about it every minute. Always complain. Always complaining. Morose and procrastinating. Just down all the time. Down on themselves, down on everybody else, complaining if they gotta work. Procrastinating. Bhagavatam says the worker in the mode of ignorance has completely forgotten how to tell right from wrong. There's no idea how it goes. Now, when we come to buddhi, understanding or intelligence, you have to look at the others. In the mode of goodness, the intelligence mode of goodness, you know what's to be done and what's not to be done. You can't discriminate. In the mode of passion, you can't discriminate very well. You're never quite sure. You always find moral ambiguity, dilemmas, things like that. And the mode of ignorance considers irreligion to be religion and vice versa, and strives always in the wrong direction. That is to say, you're not indecisive as a person in the mode of passion. You're decisive and you're wrong. You're simply wrong. Whatever you choose, yeah, this is what ought to be done. You should understand. The person is wrong. Is this just misguided? It's just always wrong. It's characteristic of the mode of ignorance. So people in the mode of ignorance, they're very sure of themselves, and they're always wrong. But you notice the earlier thing is obstinate, materialistic, obstinate, cheating. So they're obstinate and they're wrong. people in Motor Pass, you can talk with them, play them around a little bit. Not the most ignorant thing. They're going to do it no matter what. Then at the determination, Vitti, it cannot go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, morosis, and illusion. So very little actually gets done, aside from periodic spurts of violence by people in the mode of ignorance. Because their determination cannot go beyond dreaming. Fearfulness, that's what the thing, paranoia, is a big characteristic of the mode of ignorance. So there's an overemphasis on defending all the time. Cannot go beyond dreaming. Dreaming here means putting forth big castles in the sky, ideas of doing this, ideas, but never, ever, ever getting off the couch to do it. So you make plans, you make schemes, nothing happens. Lamentation, always lamenting, you know, what happened, could have done this, could have done that, could have been that, so on. Moroseness. When we come to happiness, again we have to look at the three together to see this. Bhagavad Gita is very interesting, and I put the Sanskrit there in the goodness because it makes it clear a little clearer what's happening. What it's saying here is that happiness in the mode of goodness is like poison in the beginning, but in the end like nectar. Because it follows regulative principles, so at first it may be difficult, but the happiness comes at the end. And in the mode of passion, it's like nectar in the beginning, but it's like misery, poison in the end, because the result is misery, sense gratification, the result is misery. And what it says here is illusory from beginning to end. It means that it's not there. That there is simply no happiness. It's like poison in the beginning and poison in the end. So that in the mode of ignorance, there isn't any real happiness at all. It's just illusory ideas that one may be happy. And where does it come from? In the mode of goodness, it arises from. This is the Atmabuddhi Prasada Cha, which means it's born from the satisfaction of the intelligence in the self. So it's born out of, happiness is born out of self-realization. Happiness in the mode of passion is born out of contact with the senses. And happiness in the mode of ignorance, sleep, laziness, and pramada, craziness. It's just illusory, just completely illusory. Or from intoxication or something like that. And there's a New Yorker cartoon I saw years ago that sometimes reminded me of the position of devotees are in. This shows a drunk in the gutter, really just laying out there. He's looking up his eyes, you know, a little X out. And they draw on cartoons, they make little X's in the eyes. Blotted out, and he's laying in the gutter, completely degraded, and staring up at this very stern Salvation Army lady looking down at him. And he's looking up at him, he has this grin, really great grin on his face, looking up, you know, just like feeling no pain, and she's saying to him, "Unhappy man!" So he looks very happy, you see, because he's intoxicated. It always reminds me of devotees trying to tell people there's no happiness in the material world. Because they're not happy.
They always
seem
very nice
to say,
"What are you talking about?"
I can say I'm not happy. But it's happiness in them is based on delusion. So it's happiness out of a bottle. So that's what it's based on, delusion and degradation, it says in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's not even based on sense gratification, it's just all illusory. That's why it has that belligerent edge to it.
Who are you saying I'm not at?
Now, Bhagavatam talks about worshipping Krishna in three modes. People actually, he says, those who worship me. And also here, it also talks about transcendence. So one who worships Krishna with a desire to commit violence to others is that worship of Krishna. Is in the mode of ignorance. You do this passion if you worship Krishna for sense gratification, goodness if you worship him with the idea of becoming liberated or spiritual life. Of course, transcendent if you worship Krishna out of love, without any motive, but with the desire to commit violence to others, then that's in the mode of passion, ignorance. Yeah. Goodness is not so bad. There's subtle difference between goodness. So worship of Krishna with loving devotion. In fact, well, we're skipping ahead, but I'll just show you since you're confused right here. 11:25-10. If you look at that verse, you'll see that in that sequence, I think he says, see, I couldn't fit a fourth column on this page, and not everyone has the fourth, the Turiya, the fourth. No, it doesn't mention there. Any person who worships me with loving devotion, offering his or her prescribed duties to me without material attachment, is understood to be situated in a mode of goodness. Material benefit is passion. Worshiping with desire to commit violence against others is ignorance. Well, there he doesn't mention the transcendental one. So here, yeah, with loving devotion. So what we'll see is somewhere else that makes a distinction. But sometimes there's very, very little distinction between devotional service or some quality in goodness and someone that is transcendental. You won't be able to see much of a difference. But when Bhagavatam in the third canto speaks about devotional service in the three modes, it does distinguish very clearly between transcendent devotional service. And it says that in the mode of goodness, one does it to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activity. So there's a little motive, which is permissible motive to have in the beginning. But that when a person is transcendental, there's no motive at all. Just serves Krishna out of ecstasy. Doesn't care, as Lord Chaitanya says, whether I get out of this material world or not. But again, it says devotional service in ignorance by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist. Separatist means that two things. In the purport here, it says separatist means has an interest separate from or independent of Krishna. Actually, I noticed that here, devotional service and goodness, Prabhupada doesn't mention it in the text, but in the Sanskrit, the word separatist is there too. But it's so little or subtle now that Prabhupada doesn't even mention it in the translation, although it is there in the Sanskrit.
In that one essay that Virgin appeared in the Vaishnava Journal, it was entitled The Elevation of the Mode of Goodness, he made the point that Prabhupada oftentimes would interchange Mode of Goodness and Krishna Consciousness.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, he does do that.
Along that line, I think Srila Prabhupada's comment on the Mode of Goodness is the material world.
Let me look up this word separatist. It comes up again. It's also mentioned in the list of the qualities of the mode of passion on page 2. Vidha, another word for separatist, separatist mentality, considering oneself different and better than others. Mentality. So two things, one is separate from Krishna, and the other is separate from the other devotees by virtue of being more advanced than everyone else. These ISKCON devotees, they don't understand the higher levels of Krishna consciousness. We do. Some things like that.
It sounds also like what's wrong with mode of goodness, that it makes you feel superior.
Yeah, that's right. That's why Prabhupada says there can be that tinge of separatism in the mode of goodness. The danger of the mode of goodness is you feel yourself better than everybody else. That's not exactly the illusion, but it's a contamination to start to get self-satisfied and then forget about your position in the material world, which is shaky. As long as you're in the material world, in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance can at any time overcome. But he says here, devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist. One has a motive for sense gratification, his devotional service is manifest differently. That is to say, if his only motive is to please the Lord, but if there's a motive for sense gratification, such a man may be violent, proud, envious, and angry, and his interests are separate from the Lord's. One who approaches the Supreme Lord to render devotional service, but who is proud of his personality, through the separatist angle, envious of others, or vengeful, is in the mode of anger, which means tamas, darkness. He thinks that he is the best devotee. So that thinking that I am the best devotee is a sign of ignorance. And then Prabhupada says, devotional service executed in this way is not pure, it is mixed and is of the lowest grade, tamas. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advised that a Vaishnava who is not of good character should be avoided. A Vaishnava is one who has taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life. But if one is not pure and still has motives, then he is not of the Vaishnava of the first order of good character. One may offer his respects to such a Vaishnava because he has accepted the Supreme Lord as his ultimate goal of life. So anybody who's done that, you have to say, okay, we accept you as a Vaishnava. But one should not keep company with a Vaishnava who is in the mode of ignorance. That's the instruction there. Now, Prabhupada, in this purport, defines pure devotional service as something that takes place in the stage where one is conditioned. It's very interesting, but it's possible. and here's how. He says, in pure devotional service, the only motive should be to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is not actually a motive, that is the pure condition of the living entity. In the conditioned stage, when one engages in devotional service, he should follow the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master in full surrender. So presumably, that can be done in the conditioned stage. You can follow the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master in full surrender. The spiritual master is the manifested representation of the Supreme Lord because he receives and presents the instructions of the Lord as they are by the cyclic succession. It is described in Bhagavad Gita that the teachings therein should be received by the cyclic succession, otherwise there is adulteration. To act under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master with a motive to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure devotional service. If one has a motive for sense gratification, then devotional service is manifested differently. So he's talking about the conditioned stage here. One may not be proceeded through all the levels of advancement to bhava or whatever in devotional service, but still, if he's exactingly following the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master in full surrender, the devotional service is considered pure. So that, to my mind, is the reason why he put this in the purport here, the discussion of devotional service in ignorance. So when Prabhupada, when this came out, Prabhupada was asked, you know, well, what mode of your disciples in? And he said, they're transcendental. Oh, not in anyone. That seemed, so that's how. You know, if they're surrendered and they're following, then even though they may not be advanced in any way, by that fact, their devotional service is considered to be pure because the motive is there. And that motive is shown by the degree of surrender to the instructions of the spiritual master. That's considered pure devotional service. Pure means not in the mode of goodness, not in the mode of passion, not in the mode of ignorance.
But yet the symptoms of those modes may still be manifest.
No, you won't see them. No, you won't see them. They may still be in the heart. Some desires may be in the heart, but they will not be manifest anywhere in exterior behavior. For example, I may not have some of the attributes of the pure devotee. I may not be compassionate, for example. But if I'm acting strictly under the order of my spiritual master, I may not be compassionate because I'm so worried about my own salvation or occupied by getting myself out of material nature. I don't have time to worry about other people. I mean, usually people get compassionate on other people when they themselves are safe. But if I'm following the order of my spiritual master, I'll be distributing prasadam, I'll be distributing books, I'll be distributing the holy name, just as though I were compassionate. So by strictly following the orders of a pure devotee, we in fact act just like pure devotees, even though we may not be. And you'll not see in a person's conduct who's strictly following any anomalous things. Yeah, strictly following. There'll be a tendency now and then, of course, to slide on. So there may be some manifestation of anger or frustration or something like that. But that's supposed to be overlooked. Yeah, that's supposed to be overlooked. That's the purport to 329.8. Anyway, we'll go back to this topic of devotional service later on.
If we receive a devotee following the orders of the spiritual master, this Sometimes they don't have any wrong motive. It's just that they, speaking from my own experience now, you see that the causal way to the past is there in people. Causal way of the past. And if one has spent the last 20 years being morose, you come to devotional service, you're going to, the tendency of the mind will be to be morose, even though you have nothing to be morose about. So you'll see that happen. This is what's meant by accidental manifestation of some previous mental characteristic. And so that tendency may be there toward hopelessness. Oh, I can't become a pure devotee. It's impossible to be Krishna conscious. And you look at the person and you say, you know, you have no reason to feel that way. You know, and then you find out that they've always felt helpless. And so there's just a streak of the mode of ignorance that's still there in the mentality. But it will go away in time. And therefore, that devotee is not really to be considered in the mode of ignorance, even though they may see some superficial manifestation like that. But if he's envious, proud, violent, and angry, on a habitual, long-term basis, then you discover that he's performing devotional service so that he can show up somebody else. I've seen some people come close to it.
Was it transcendental competition?
Well, yeah, sometimes it wasn't so transcendental.
Right. Even though,
exactly. Because you'd see, I remember when there was a big transcendental competition, sometimes people would try to rig the rules. And what is that? That's either passionate or ignorant. Depends on whether it's enough that you should succeed or if others must fail. Yeah, that's what Prabhupada does here in this purport. One may offer respects to such a Vaishnava because he has accepted the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal of life. Now, usually such people, even if they're mode of ignorance, they will worship Krishna because they're convinced that the only reason they're going to be able to destroy their enemies is because of Krishna. Or they've accepted Krishna as the ultimate goal of life, even though they're going to do some other things first. But actually you'll find that they have that conviction that Krishna is the ultimate goal, even though they may say, but when I'm old, or later on, or when I solve this problem, or when I solve that problem. Well, I guess in some ways it may be not visible to everybody, but that's for Krishna to understand. I mean, because some devotional service is hearing, chanting, remembering. If they're saying Krishna a lot, that can be remembering. Obviously, it's not, maybe not be very much. But it would be hard to think of a Vaishnava who didn't do some remembering of Krishna, some hearing about Krishna, some chanting about Krishna. Okay, let's keep going. I'll probably get through this today. Kinds of being empowered. This is a few odds and ends toward the end of the 11th chapter. The rakshasas become powerful. When mode of ignorance increases, the rakshasas increase. Whereas when the mode of passion increases, the demons, the asuras, and the mode of goodness increases, the strength of the demigods. So there's a difference between the asuras and the rakshasas. translation is the strength of the most wicked. So the Rakshasas are on an even lower level. Of course, they're typically cannibals, cannibalistic, low-grade beings of even worse features than the Asuras. They become powerful. The state of consciousness that precedes, typically the emblem of goodness, is alert, wakefulness. Passion is dreaming sleep, and ignorance is deep, dreamless sleep, is product of the mode of ignorance. The fourth is called, the next, the transcendent state, Krishna consciousness, is called Turiya. Because the transcendental state will be perceived through, just like if you're in a state of transcendental activity, it may look like passion, but it's not. Like Arjuna's state, may look like passion. Anyway, we'll get to the transcendent. Yeah.
I thought you said earlier that the person in the mode of ignorance like complete.
Yeah, some of them like to dream, but, well, no, this is not that what state is characteristic. It says that what, this is the state of consciousness that's produced by these different modes. You know, so it doesn't necessarily mean that's the same thing as, this is not, you know, it's not that people in the mode of goodness are always alert and wakeful, people in the mode of passion are dreaming all the time. They're not, it's not like that. But that these states are caused by which mode. Residence resides in forest, goodness, town, grama, says passion, and the gambling house, which includes other places, similar such places, sporting houses, bars, liquor stores, race tracks. Everybody's home. Turning into a gambling house, pretty much. Well, you know, place sporting, sports, good sports go. That's all in the mode of. Whereas a temple is, residing in a temple is transcendental. Okay? So that's the dwelling place in the mode of ignorance. Let me see what the purpose is. 25. Some other places where you don't want to go. Dhyuta Sadhana, gambling house, pool halls, remember? They still have pool halls? I guess they were. They're probably called fancy clubs, you know. More and more see middle class people, you know, racetracks, poker clubs, bars, and other sinful places that maintain an abysmal level of consciousness.
Bowling alley.
They usually have a bar along the back of the lodge. And people can't get out. People don't leave. I remember when I was in college, there was this bar that all the students used to go to. And there was a popular song then at that place that went, "We gotta get out of this place, and it's the last thing you ever do." So I remember that song. You know. Whenever that song would go on the jukebox, you know, everybody would stand on the tables and chairs and jump up and down and scream together, "We gotta get out of this place." And they'd sit down and keep drinking. And then I graduated from college, went away, became a devotee, and, you know, some 6-7 years later, I happened to be walking by that bar, and I heard from outside, "We gotta get this place."
But at the time going there, I had to recognize the people. You know? It was still in there.
They're a little old.
It says they can't get out. You know. Boy, we're really running out of time. Let's do a little bit of the mode of passion. See what happens. Now, the mode of passion is really easy to identify because it has that little piquant prodding of lust. You know? That's what's really behind it. It's a simple, very simple thing. Born ragatmaka, born of lust or desire. You know? Freud has this general word called libido. Not only sexual desire, but any of those kind of things that look like manifestation, that there's hankerings, longings, urgings, you know, the Faustian man, you know, mode of passion. What we saw in America in the 60s, where there was a so-called generation gap, it was the war between those in the mode of passion. Why don't you get a job? Why don't you make something of yourself? Those are motive ignorance. What difference does it make? Let's just get stoned. You know? That's what it was. And the only reason any mode of goodness came about was because Srila Prabhupada. It'll become very difficult. It's actually very difficult. You don't see too many living examples of the mode of goodness. That's very difficult to see. It just doesn't really exist anymore. You have to go back in the West a century or so before you start to find people like that. You know, if you do know somebody, typically they're some kind of priest or something like that, outside of the circle of devotees. So it's born of lust and desire. Prabhupada's really, if you look at the purport to 14.6. He is very emphatic about where it comes from. Let's have his pictures in the wrong place. The mode of passion is characterized by the attraction between man and woman. Woman has attraction for man has attraction for woman. This is called mode of passion. There it is, you know. And when the mode of passion is increased, or one develops the hankering for material enjoyment, he wants to enjoy sense gratification. This happens when people, like they grow up, they go through adolescence. Then once they have sexual experience, that's when all the other senses then become agitated to enjoy more than ever. It's all wired together. You know, then when there's sex desire, then one wants to taste, one wants to touch, one wants to smell, one wants to see. And then everything goes, because that's when you really get immersed into sense gratification. Sense gratification, a man in the mode of passion wants some honor in society or in the nation, wants to have a happy family, nice children, wife, and a house. This is really, you know, this is the ideal person in the mode of passion. You know, nowadays nobody wants to get married. As long as one is hankering after these things, he has to work very hard. So that work is the sign of the mode of sex desire and hard work. These two things are characteristic of the mode of passion. People are driven like crazy to do it. So there's activity, always activity, always going. Typical person in the mode of passion is overworked, over-endeavor, over-striving. The general character of the person, Bhagavatam says, he works hard to acquire prestige and fortune. Remember the subtle form, what Prabhupada calls the subtle forms of sex desire. Profit, adoration, and distinction. These are the subtle forms of sex desire. Men, at any rate,
want these things because they do not feel that they are can be happy unless they are not only appreciated but appreciated by women. They do these things, build skyscrapers, start wars, wear fancy uniforms, get cars, so that women will admire them. If the admiration of women is not present, it's too disheartening for words. So they're doing all these things so that women will say, wow, I'm impressed. This is what's going on. And you can tell when that's what's going on, you know. There's, you know, the big scene in the ISKCON temple when the guy gets up with a mandunga drum, you know, and so on. He's conscious of the, you know, stares.
Pure devotion.
The admiration.
Pure devotion.
No, definitely not. The Prabhupada says here, modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of the mode of passion. You notice the whole thing, in fact, the whole business of the modern world, the philosophy of the modern world is passion. I mean the philosophy of evolution, for example, is a philosophy that can only come in the mode of passion. In the mode of goodness, you know, but the mode of passion is the imposition to see. Evolution means, see, there was a big change in European consciousness. And that change preceded the philosophy of evolution. Evolution is one of the symptoms of the change, which is to start seeing everything in terms of growth and development. And the whole Western consciousness now is to see everything in terms of growth and development. Earlier, well, for, you know, there's a historian, his name is Lovejoy, and in the 30s he wrote a book, a Harvard historian, historian of ideas, and he wrote a book called The Great Chain of Being, and he traces back this notion which he first discovered in a poem by Alexander Pope, 18th century British neoclassical form. This notion of a hierarchy with God at the top, going down to dull matter at the bottom. And this notion is there, medieval, everything. Everything is in hierarchies. There's a chain of being, and there are links in the chain. There's God. Then there are angels, and the angels in Western theology, they have cherubim, seraphim, throne, dominion, powers, you know, all the way down as nine hierarchy ranks of angels. And then you come down to human society, and you know, different angels ran different parts of the world. They're like demigods. Then below the angels, human society, who's first, there's the king. Then there's the ranks of nobility, and then down to that. And among the animals, who's the king of the beasts? The lions, you see. And among the metals, who's the king of the metals? Gold, and so on, down to lead, you see. So there was a hierarchy.
Every category,
and everybody knew what their place was in the hierarchy, and this was the state. It was a vertical chain of being. What happened in the 19th century is what Lovejoy calls the temporalization of the chain of being. In other words, it went from this way, vertical to horizontal, and it became a temporal chain. And from that you get the notion of progress. You know, the 19th century idol was progress. Still the 20th century, not so different. Progress is our most important product, General Electric used to tell us when I was a kid. Ronald Reagan, actually, on television for General Electric. Progress is our most important product. Like the gospel of progress and improvement, and things are getting better all the time. And there was, and then out of that, you know, there was finally Darwinism and social Darwinism. The human race by natural selection, by the people who are rich and, you know, more powerful, you know, reproducing themselves more and therefore increasing the human race, then the notion of evolution, you start from nothing and you gradually go to, well, God, ultimately. You get Hegel's philosophy. Hegel's philosophy is basically that the absolute truth is actually coming to full self-consciousness through the trials and the struggles of history. And in other words, God himself is evolving, you know, to becoming more and more better and more self-realized through the trial and struggles and conflicts of history. That's what's going on. You know, so this is the temporalization of the chain of being. And what is that is? That's a big shift from the mode of goodness to the mode of passion. That's what you see happening. And so everything now, we just look at everything in terms of progress, development, increase. When you study Sanskrit, for example, in a university, they teach it to you in the mode of passion. They teach what they call diachronic view of Sanskrit. With the Panini system, our system, they call synchronic. You see the language as one frozen thing. They see it in terms that it evolved from an earlier Proto-European language and then evolved from old Persian and Vedic and all this other. In terms, so they see everything is in terms of growth and development.